College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
All right, let's put the women and children in bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the second edition of the College Hoop Today podcast. And this episode is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. Whether you're a Carolina guy, a Duke guy, a member of Ram Nation, or whatever fan is looking to go to games, you need to check out SeatGeek, the mobile app that turns your phone into tickets for your favorite sports team. SeatGeek is my go-to for all game tickets. And we will be talking to VCU head coach Will Wade later in this podcast. We also want you to check us out on iTunes after what was an unbelievable opening weekend in college basketball. And there are certain things right now that are really piquing my curiosity.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10.
John's five questions.
Question number one. What was the dominant theme from the opening weekend in college basketball? The answer is simple. It's parity. We talked last week about how last season was last season, and this season starts a new chapter. Unlike last year, where Wisconsin, Duke, and Kentucky separated themselves from the back, you are going to see parity at the highest level this season in college basketball. And look at what we saw in the first couple of days. Georgetown lost to Radford. Wisconsin lost to Western Illinois. UCLA lost at Pauley Pavilion to Monmouth and held off Cal Poly by 5 Sunday night. Illinois lost to North Florida. Georgia fell to Chattanooga. And NC State lost at home by 17 to William & Mary. It's all fun and games until somebody loses a bye game. Question number two. How good is North Carolina? I saw the Tar Heels live Friday night in Annapolis as part of the CBS Sports Veteran Classic, and I watched them again Sunday against Fairfield. My feeling on North Carolina is this. The Tar Heels are good enough to win a national championship. They're good enough to get to a Final Four, but this team is not as good and does not have the same ceiling as Roy Williams' teams that cut the nets down in 2005 and 2009, but you have to marvel at the options on that North Carolina roster. The Tar Heels are like an all-you-can-eat buffet. They've got a little bit of everything. If you want guards, they've got Nate Britt and also Joel Berry. If you want wings, they've got Justin Jackson and Theo Pinson, who quietly has been very, very solid for the Tar Heels in his first two games, averaging 9 rebounds and 7 points through the first two contests. And, of course, they've got bigs with Bryce Johnson, Kennedy Meeks, and Isaiah Hicks. And to think that North Carolina has all these different options at its disposal without ACC Player of the Year, potentially, Marcus Paige. Question number three. Which player has become appointment television? It may be just 3 or 4 days into the season, but Providence's Chris Dunn right now has separated himself already from everybody else in college basketball. On Saturday night at the Dunkin' Donuts Center against Harvard, Dunn had 32 points, 8 steals, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 blocks. I firmly believe that if Chris Dunn was playing at Kentucky, people would be comparing him to John Wall. What's up next for Dunn and the Friars? The Gavitt Games Wednesday night in Providence against Illinois. Question number four. Who should be encouraged? To me, that question is easy to answer, but I have to talk about it. The Cincinnati Bearcats. And I know I talked about Cincinnati last week on the podcast as one of the best teams that nobody's talking about, but the Bearcats have reiterated that theme by what they've done in its first two games, in their first two games. Cincinnati is averaging 101.5 points per game in its first two games. They beat Robert Morris, a team that I believe will win the Northeast Conference and make the NCAA tournament for the second year under Andy Toole, 106-44 on Sunday. And after watching Cincinnati live on Sunday against Robert Morris, the main difference, okay, between this Cincinnati team and the last five that have made the NCAA tournament under Mick Cronin, their offensive potential. The Bearcats made 11 three-point shots on Sunday. And to me, the two freshmen, Justin Jennifer and Jacob Evans, are the guys that are making all the difference. Justin Jennifer has a real chance to be for this Cincinnati Cincinnati team what Tyler Ulis was last year for Kentucky, a pass-first point guard that sets the table. And Jacob Evans, again, under-recruited but not undervalued by the Cincinnati staff. The 6'6 wing, again, 10.7 rebounds against Robert Morris, a guy that has a chance to average maybe 6 or 8 points off the game as a true freshman. Question number five. Who should be worried? To me, it's the Texas Longhorns. I've covered Shaka Smart for a long time. I know the DNA of what he wants his teams to be. That was not Texas in Asia on Friday night when Texas lost to a Washington team that started 4 true freshmen in China. To me, this team right now does not reflect Shaka Smart's demeanor, and I felt that after I saw the Longhorns practice 2 weeks ago in Austin. And you still have to look at what this team has in its non-conference schedule. Texas will host UConn. It will host North Carolina. It will host Vanderbilt in January as part of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. And the Longhorns also will go to the Battle for Atlantis, where they open with in-state rival Texas A&M in a game that is absolutely huge for recruiting. And to me, for Texas to get back on track, they're going to need Isaiah Taylor to shoot less and pass more. Against Washington, he had 29 points and 7 rebounds, but he had 0 assists. When you have a supporting cast of Cam Ridley, of Prince Ibe, of Tevin Mack, of Kerwin Roach, of Eric Davis, you can't have 0 assists. Another alarming thing about Isaiah Taylor's opener against Washington, he took 17 shots, 5 more than anybody else on the Longhorns roster. When we return, we will hear from the man that replaced Shaka Smart at VCU. You. That's Will Wade. I'm John Rothstein. This is the College Hoops Today podcast. SeatGeek is so easy to use and completely different from other ticket sites. SeatGeek pulls the ticket data from all those other ticket sales sites into one place to save you time. The best part is it shows you the full price of the ticket up front, never hides any fees, and usually has lower prices than other ticket sites and is backed by a 100% guarantee. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 ticket rebate, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code HOOPS. SeatGeek will send you $20 once you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app. Enter promo code HOOPS today. Get all that information at SeatGeek.com. All right, welcome back to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. VCU is entering a new era. Shaka Smart is now the head coach at the University of Texas, and the man replaced him is Will Wade, and Will is on the line right now. Will, I'm curious, what would your reaction have been a year ago if somebody had told you that right now you'd be days away from not just being the head coach at VCU, but also about to embark on a journey to Madison Square Garden to take on Coach K and Duke at the end of the week?
Yeah, pretty stunning. A year ago, I was, you know, worried about playing Hiawassee College at Chattanooga. So, I've certainly come a long way in a year and very excited about the opportunity ahead of us as we continue to move the VCU brand forward and to get to play in such a prestigious arena against the best program in college basketball. It's certainly a tremendous opportunity for our program, and we're looking forward to it.
You know, Will, you were a successful head coach the past 2 years at Chattanooga. What's been the biggest difference day-to-day in coaching the Mocs and now coaching a program the caliber of VCU?
Yeah, there's just more time commitments. There's more moving parts here at VCU than there were at Chattanooga. Had a great 2 years at Chattanooga. Tremendous people, tremendous athletic department. My athletic director there was awesome. We've got all the same things here at VCU, but just moving into our new $25 million basketball development center, moving into the center and having 5 or 6 graduate assistants and just having a whole army of folks who work with you is new and challenging. It's a great advantage that we have, but it's also challenging to define roles for everybody in the program, make sure everybody's working, holding everybody accountable for what they need to be doing. But it's been great so far, and everybody's working hard, and we're doing the best we can to keep this season moving in a good direction.
What's the biggest thing you know now about being the head coach at VCU that you didn't know when you were hired in early April?
You always know you know, how passionate the fans are and how into it all the fans are about everything basketball-wise. But I've really been taken back a little bit by the interest in our recruiting and the interest in just everything that goes on in our program. I knew the basketball part was a big deal, but just the interest in absolute every moving part of our program, whether it be any little thing with one of our players, who we're recruiting, where we're going, that's certainly been ratcheted up a couple notches since I left last time. But it's great. You know, you want to be somewhere where people are fanatical about it. People have a strong interest in our program, and you know, we're certainly at one of those places. And it's been fun so far, and we just got to keep it rolling.
VCU head coach Will Wade joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. The Rams will head to Madison Square Garden later this week to take on Mike Krzyzewski and Duke, Wisconsin, and Georgetown, also a part of the 2015 2K Sports Classic. Will, you came to VCU in 2009 as an assistant under Shaka Smart. As somebody who's seen this program evolve over the past few years, what is the biggest difference in VCU's program now versus when you got there as an assistant 6 years ago?
Yeah, I think 6 years ago we were a very, very good, very, very strong regional program. I think now VCU is a very, very good and very, very strong national program and national brand. And Coach Smart certainly had a ton to do with that, with the Final Four run, and then just his branding and him being the face of VCU basketball and doing such a great job representing the program. So, you know, I think just the national brand that we have now, just to be able to, you know, the last time we played at Madison Square Garden, I was an assistant, and we won our way into the preseason NIT by winning at Wake Forest. And now, you know, now we're going back to Madison Square Garden, but we're back there as, you know, one of the folks from the pod who automatically, you know, who automatically advances. So that shows a little bit of the growth, the growth of our program, where you're at a place where you can, you know, be in these high level tournaments and be one of the teams that's sought after to be in these tournaments. I think that speaks to, you know, how we're thought of nationally as opposed to maybe just a little more regional 6 years ago. But the program certainly come a long way. Our university's invested in the program. Our athletic department's invested in the program. And, you know, everybody, so to speak, is all in and put all their chips into the basketball program. And when you do that, good things happen, and that's the reason our program's been able to grow at a tremendous rate the last 6 years.
Now, obviously, one of the main reasons why VCU is in tournaments like the 2K Sports Classic and you've gotten the attention that you've gotten is because of the job that Shaka Smart did at VCU. In sports, people say you never want to be the guy that follows the guy, but you're the guy at VCU that's following Shaka Smart. How have you embraced that as a positive instead of a negative?
Yeah, it's funny. I was reading over some notes from Pat Riley's book the other day. I'm a pretty avid reader, and I was reading over some notes from The Winner Within. And
Phenomenal book.
And I take notes and, you know, on every book and then type them out, and I have them in a notebook. And I was going back through some notes, and Pat Riley in the book mentions that the two toughest years in coaching are your first year when you get a job and any year after your team wins a championship. And so I'm kind of 0-2 on that right now with VCU since we won the Atlantic 10 Conference Championship. And then obviously this is my first season back here at VCU. But, you know, I think you just got to be yourself and do what you do and understand that, hey, you know, the structure of what we do is fairly similar to what Coach Smart did, but then you put your own spin on it, you put your own twist on it, and there's some differences in how we prepare and how we do, and then schematically there's some major differences. But our guys have you know, embraced it. Our guys have been good with it, and we're certainly still a work in progress, but we have a lot to work with. I think we've got a team that's going to be very, very good once we get some more mileage on us. So we're excited about the challenge ahead, and I'm thrilled to be here at VCU. I think it's one of the top 25 programs in the country, and to have an opportunity like that is just something that you just feel so excited about every day. So blessed to be the head coach there every day.
You know, well, a lot of people don't know this next thing about you because of your affiliation with VCU and the Final Four team in 2011. But before you arrived at VCU in 2009, you were an assistant for Tommy Amaker at Harvard. What did you learn from Coach Amaker under his tutelage in terms of the vision for a program that you now apply to VCU?
Coach Amaker was an unbelievable person to work for. It was my first job as an assistant coach, a full-time assistant coach, and just being able to learn the ins and outs of selling a vision for a program, selling what you want your program to be, and then being able to articulate that was just unbelievable. I still marvel at how good he is meeting with recruits, prospective donors, parents, you name it. He's so compelling with his passion and what he believes in his heart, mm-hmm. and getting people to see things his way. He's very persuasive that way. And it was tremendous for me as a first-time assistant, first-time on the road, to be able to learn from him and just watch him, whether it be in a home visit or on a phone call with somebody. I mean, just phenomenal. He's obviously taken that program to tremendous heights, and there's really no end in store with the way they're recruiting right now. But he was a tremendous mentor for me, great guy. Still talk to him, text with him, and stay in touch with him. And I'm still inspired when I talk to him. I feel like I'm lazy after I get done talking to him. He gets you going and gets you excited, you know, whether it be about his team or your team or life or anything that's going on. But very, very fortunate to have worked for him, very, very lucky to have worked for him. And we certainly use a lot of his recruiting structure and recruiting sound bites and the way we go about our recruiting is certainly rooted in a lot of things that I learned from him.
And for our listeners out there right now, Harvard right now has a top 10 recruiting class in tow for the 2016 class. You know, 10 years ago, people would have said that is as likely as me finishing the New York City Marathon. Anyway, VCU head coach Will Wade joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Rams will do battle with Duke in the 2K Sports Classic later this week in Madison Square Garden. Wisconsin and Georgetown also in the event. Will, 2011, you go to the Final Four at VCU. You're on the staff. Your team was branded as the Broad Street Bullies because of your hard-nosed demeanor and toughness. Has it been tough to get back to that, considering the amount of attention and bold print this program has received since that trip to the Final Four?
Yeah, that's you know, that was one thing that when I came back and got the job here, that, you know, was a little bit surprising. I felt like maybe we'd lost our way a little bit in terms of our toughness and in terms of kids coming here for the right reasons and being thankful to be here. And, you know, we do have tremendous facilities, tremendous support, all those sort of things. And you know, we need guys who understand that, hey, we've got great things, but you know, don't forget who dug the well. Drink the great water that we've got, but don't forget all the hard work and all the folks who put in the time to make all this happen. So, we've been working hard to just establish, you know, just a blue collar, gritty, grimy team with the guys that we've got, and then through recruiting and acquiring new guys, we need to get guys that obviously certainly have a high level of talent, but also have some hidden talents and have some ways about them that are just going to dig down and really, really be excited about being at VCU. And we don't ever want to feel like we're doing anybody a favor. You know, we want guys to come here for the right reasons. They want to come here. They want to work hard. They want to be a part of a winning program and play in front of a very, very passionate fan base. So, you know, we've worked hard to trying to get that Broad Street Bully moniker back. It's not that it totally left, but anytime you win, there's going to be some slippage and some things that maybe helped contribute to you winning and contribute to you getting higher caliber players. But you can still do that and maintain your identity, and that's a tightrope that we've got to walk, and certainly one that my staff and I talk about quite a bit every day, and trying to maintain trying to maintain that blue-collar nature, but also, you know, have really, really good players in our program.
Well, you're talking about the players in your program, and I'm curious, who do you think is the one player on VCU's roster that most people nationally aren't talking about right now, but they may after this week's games at Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, I think our point guard, Jaquan Lewis, he was the backup to Briante the last couple years, and then when Briante went down, he stepped into the forefront last year, and he was able to get some valuable minutes, some valuable time on the floor last season, maybe a little bit ahead of when he deserved it, but it was able to expedite his growth process, his maturation process as a point guard. He's a little bit high risk, high reward. He'll have high assist numbers, and he'll have a couple turnovers in there as well, but he's lightning quick. He can get to the rim, and we're just a much better team offensively when he's out there on the court. So I think he's somebody that has the potential to really break out and catch some folks by surprise on the national stage this weekend. And certainly if he does that, it'll increase our chances of success in these games. And we're hopeful of that. But he's worked hard to position himself, and he's got a ton of talent. And now it's just a matter of letting it all out and letting it all out on the right stage.
You know, there's no doubt about it. When VCU has had really good teams in the past, the point guard was always the head of the snake, whether it was Joey Rodriguez or Darius Theus or obviously Briante Weber. You know, Will, you mentioned earlier in our talk that, you know, you're a big reader, you take notes, and we obviously touched on Coach Smart and Coach Amaker. You're a student of the game when it comes to college basketball. As you're now taking over a bigger program, what programs or what programs specifically do you look at and say, I want to emulate this or I want to emulate that? Who do you have a fondness for within the realm of the sport?
It's a good question. I've always, from afar, I've always enjoyed Cincinnati's program. I like the way Coach Cronin goes about things. They're unbelievably consistent. They're unbelievably tough. I've always felt like, you know, that mark of consistency with what they do. They've made five straight NCAA tournaments. It's a program, I know a couple of their assistants well, and it's a program that I always monitor and kind of root for and hope that they do well. And certainly we play them this year, so I'll get to see it up close and personal. But, you know, I think Cincinnati is just a great blue-collar, hard-working program. And then I've also, always admired what Wichita State's done. I think they've been able to maintain it at a very, very high level, and they've done it a bunch of different ways. He's a tremendous coach. Coach Marshall does a tremendous job with the team, and I think their fan support's really good, just like ours. I think that's a program that's got some similarities to ours, and you just really admire how much they've dominated the Missouri Valley over the course of time here the last 4 or 5 years. So those are two programs that I certainly pay attention to, keep my antenna up with, and follow from afar.
Well, Will, we appreciate you giving us a couple minutes. We know it's obviously a very big week for VCU. Safe travels up to New York, and we look forward to seeing you when you get to the Big Apple.
Thanks so much. Have a great one.
You got it. That's VCU head coach Will Wade. When we return, I will give you 5 good nuggets in college basketball. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. John Rothstein back here on the College Hoops Today podcast. We'd like to thank VCU's head coach Will Wade for joining us in our last segment. Again, you want to listen to that interview or just give us a review of what we're doing here, check us out on iTunes. But right now, we want to go a little deeper.
5 good nuggets.
5. 5.
6.
No, 5. But you were close.
5 good nuggets right now in college basketball. Number 1, we go to the Commonwealth for the Kentucky Wildcats. How about this? Before this season, in Marcus Lee's first 2 years of college basketball, he never played more than 20 minutes in a game. He was never into a rhythm during his first 2 years at Kentucky because he was playing with Julius Randle, Willie Cauley-Stein, Carl Towns, a loaded front court. But through Kentucky's first couple of games, Lee is producing and producing at a high level. In the Wildcats' first two contests, he's averaging 11 8 rebounds, and 3 blocks. Nugget number 2, UNLV continues to play with fire. And we've seen the Running Rebels do this over the past couple of years under Dave Rice in their bye games, but it happened again Friday night against Cal Poly. The Running Rebels held off Cal Poly by just 2 points, but again, they were shaky down the stretch. And the question I have right now for UNLV fans out there, can you win and win at a consistent level with Jerome Seegers as your point guard? The transfer from Rutgers has been enigmatic throughout his college career. I'm a big fan of him as a kid, as a person, but still, he has to go out and fly the plane. He has to go out and prove that he can run a team at the highest level. An alarming thing and an alarming stat from that game where UNLV beat Cal Poly by 2, the Running Rebels had a team. Had 16 assists to just 19 turnovers. Nugget number 3, I think pound for pound right now that the Cal Bears have the best starting 5 in college basketball. When Konzo Martin puts Ty Wallace, Jordan Matthews, Jabari Bird, and Jaylen Brown along with Ivan Rabb out there to start a game, I don't think there's a starting 5 in the country that comes close. The Bears have Elite 8 talent. The question is, will they have Elite 8 chemistry? And hopefully we'll get Konzo Martin on this podcast in the next couple of weeks. Number 4, we go to the Lone Star State. And again, in every conversation I had with Baylor staff in the preseason, they all raved about one guy, Ish Wainwright. This was a top 50 kid out of high school who, again, played spot minutes throughout the first couple of years of his college career, but never got into a rhythm. That could change this season. He's down 30 pounds, and he had a phenomenal stat line in the opener against Stephen F. Austin. 8 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. I've got 2 words right now to describe Ish Wainwright. That is glue guy. And number 5, it appears that Murphy's Law has hit the Atlantic 10. It's hard to believe that the Atlantic 10 2 years ago had 6 teams in the NCAA tournament. Right now, it's to be determined how many this league will get in the field of 68 in 2016. URI suffered a brutal loss over the weekend when EC Matthews, arguably a potential first-round pick in the 2016 NBA draft, was lost for the year with a torn ACL. And again, you have to remember, Dayton is without Dyshawn Pierre until at least December because of this issue with the school. So right now, the teams that were projected 1-2 in the Atlantic 10, Dayton and URI are without arguably their most talented player. URI is without EC Matthews the entire year. We don't know exactly when Dyshawn Pierre will be back. We think it's going to be in December. But the big issue for the Atlantic 10 is this. In November and December, after realignment a couple years ago, we have seen teams and conferences elevate their brand by what they did in the non-conference portion of the schedule. What can URI do without EC Matthews? What can Dayton do without Dyshawn Pierre? These teams obviously aren't as capable as they would have been at full strength, and that could hurt the Atlantic 10 where it matters most in March. Now, again, we're going to go to a social media type segment right now. I want to take your questions from Twitter in the future. If you want to be a part of this segment, just tweet me at John Rothstein, J-O-N. Our first question is going to be from Ted Newhard. He wants to know, John, why is UCLA struggling? First off, I think UCLA right now is in a situation where they do not have anybody that you look at on their roster and say, this guy is going to be in the NBA next season. They had it 2 years ago in Steve Alford's first year with Kyle Anderson and Jordan Adams and Zach LaVine. Last year they had it with Kevon Looney. You don't have that surefire pro right now on UCLA's roster. And the Bruins better be ready Thursday night against Pepperdine. I saw Pepperdine in the preseason when I was in Los Angeles. This is a contender in the West Coast Conference. And after UCLA plays Pepperdine, they go to Maui when they will open with UNLV next Monday. Another question right now. This is from JC. Purdue's biggest question mark was the backcourt. After scorching the Nets this weekend, are you still concerned? I think Purdue has shooters with obviously Dakota Mathias and Kendall Stevens and Ryan Klein, who Matt Painter told me before the season was the best freshman shooter that he ever coached, has been terrific for the Boilermakers. He's 7 of 13 from 3 in his first 2 games. The backcourt question for me with Purdue was not the shooting for the Boilermakers. It was the point guard play. People don't remember how good John Octius was last year for the Boilers. And that's really what I'm curious to see. Will Johnny Hill, the fifth-year transfer from UT San Antonio, be good enough when it matters most for the Boilers. That's the one thing you have to look at. And the final question right now for our social media segment, this is from DC Chops. Thoughts on the Georgetown loss, and what do you think they do against Maryland? The Georgetown loss, and there's really no other way to say this, was an awful defeat for the Hoyas, and it was really also an awful defeat for the Big East. The Big East, again, had two bad losses in the first 24 hours of the season. Belmont beat Marquette at Marquette, and Radford won at Georgetown. This conference, okay, did better last year than it did in its first year, but the Big East still, in 2 years of existence in this new form, has only had one team reached the Sweet 16, and that was Xavier. And Xavier made it to the Sweet 16 by beating Georgia State in the round of 32, because Georgia State had one of the more epic comebacks and upsets that we saw over Baylor in recent memory when they erased a 9-point deficit with 2:49 to play. The Big East has to be cognizant of what the national perception is if it continues to lose games like this. And if Georgetown is supposed to be the second-best team in this league, it is an awful look for the league when the Hoyas go down at home to Radford, and it's not going to get any easier for Georgetown. They are at Maryland Tuesday night in the Gavitt Games, and then they will close out the week in New York against Wisconsin in the 2K Sports Classic, and then the winner or loser of VCU and Duke. We will now look at five games to watch for this week.
Games to watch. Games to watch.
All right, I mentioned Georgetown, Maryland, so we're going to erase that one. The two games in the Champions Classic are obviously big time in Chicago. Kentucky, Duke, and Kansas, Michigan State on Tuesday. Kansas is my pick to win the national championship. Bill Self has terrific leadership in the backcourt with Frank Mason and Devontae Graham. He's playing these two-point guards together, so the Champions Classic every year is appointment viewing. That will not change this season. Okay, Thursday, a couple of games I got my eye on. In the Puerto Rico shootout, Miami takes on Mississippi State. If you've heard me on this podcast last week, or you've read what I've written at CBSSports.com, you know that I'm high on both these teams as potential sleepers, Miami in the ACC and also Mississippi State in the SEC. Now, another game on Thursday night that, you know, isn't in bold print, but you want to take a look at, Creighton at Indiana. Indiana, to me, is a top 15 team and an explosive offensive team, but I'm curious to see how they would do against Creighton. And I watched some of Greg McDermott's team in their opener on Saturday night at Omaha, and I got to give you a name, Kyrie Thomas. This kid is a long freshman wing for the Jays who is going to have a sensational career, might be the most under-the-radar freshman in the Big East. Remember the name, Kyrie Thomas for Creighton. Jays are at Assembly Hall to take on Indiana, 7 o'clock East Coast time on Thursday. And again, another Gavitt Games to watch this week. It will be another game in the Gavitt Games to watch this week. It will be Friday night in Ann Arbor, Xavier and Michigan. I'm bullish on Michigan if they're going to be healthy. And as far as Xavier goes, Chris Mack has been a model of consistency with the Musketeers. Two great brands, two teams that should be in the NCAA tournament. We'd like to thank you for listening. You can, again, give us a review on iTunes. We will be back next week. Everybody enjoy the hoops. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.